is a My Talk Dirt Alert.
All right, Holly. Hello.
Good afternoon, ladies.
It's the Cinco de Mayo dirt.
It sure is. The dirt has nothing to
it's
do.
It's got a salt rim.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And it's on the rocks.
Thank you.
So we're going to start with some official government news concerning the world of celebrity. We're going to start with Kim Kardashian. She's been forced to deny that she purchased an ancient Roman sculpture that had been stolen from Italy.
I love that this is a story, and I kind of love this story.
So, okay, tell us.
After she has to do this after the U.S. government demanded that she forfeit the piece of art. So Kim reportedly bought the work back in 2016 from Belgium's Axel Vervoort Gallery, run by the same art dealer and designer who decorated Kim and Kanye's minimalist mansion.
It's probably sitting in some corner with glass around it or plexiglass or something. She probably doesn't even know where it is.
Well, exactly. So this piece of art is known as the fragment of Myron's Samian's Athena. The piece is from the first or second century and depicts a female figure from the waist down. Now, according to ArtNet News, the statue was detained at the border of the United States in 2016 after Kim's team tried to import it with the wrong documentation. Now it's been confirmed that the work was looted. This is the quote, looted, smuggled, and illegally exported from Italy.
Wow. So, but she didn't know any of this.
Well, yeah, it's
I mean, this is just
this
bad.
Is the gallery.
This is the gallery buying
something that was smuggled out of Italy.
Wow.
Okay.
And then selling it
And then sold it to Kim, and it sold it to her for so much money. She said she doesn't even remember getting it.
So here's what a spokesperson for Kim says about her involvement with this piece of art, that, quote, Kim never purchased this piece, and this is the first she has learned of it, its existence. We believe it may have been purchased using her name without authorization, and because it was never received, she was unaware of the transaction. We encourage an investigation and hope it gets returned to the rightful owner.
So she never even got the piece of art?
But imagine having this much money that someone can blow $750,000 on crap you never receive and you don't even notice, and it's like 5 years later.
Right. Here's why. They were doing the complete renovation of that place to make it be all cement corners and beige. Remember?
Yeah. But
so imagine how much
artwork. Yeah.
Well, I mean, imagine how much artwork is coming in and going that you're just signing off invoices.
Wow.
That's how rich they are.
Oh yeah, exactly. And
just rich.
You're not even signing the invoice. You have your business manager and your assistant handling all the invoices, and you're just looking at a spreadsheet at the end of the day about renovations, X amount of dollars.
If I were her, I would just like say, I'm so happy a piece of Italy's ancient culture is being returned to its homeland, and I would just put a bow on it, eat that money, and move on. And that's probably what she will do.
But where is the piece of art?
She has it, supposedly.
Well, it was actually, it was stuck at the border.
Oh, he never got it.
Oh, she never
got it. That's the problem.
But she paid for it.
Well, right, that's what I'm saying, is she doesn't even have it.
Yeah, but, I mean, imagine that. This is what she's going to lose the money.
Well, of course, but she doesn't even have it.
Right.
Yeah, because in that statement that I had just read, her people, Kim Kardashian's people, are saying of this involvement with the government, that this was the first that she even learned of its existence. She didn't even know.
That's money.
That
is money.
Do you think Kanye bought it under her name? Like, this is going to just put this one in Kim's name. And, like, they don't even talk about it because this looks like something Kanye would buy.
Oh, money.
It is just like this.
Money.
Well, here's a spokesperson from the gallery saying that they acquired this piece in good faith from a French gallery who had also acquired it in equally good faith from a German auction house. Then they say that the former collector was English, but precise traces seem to stop there. However, there's no evidence that this piece was illegally imported from Italy. So
we've seen this movie where, like, people smuggle stuff that they're not supposed to, and then they immediately start trying to bury it in a trail of paperwork that looks official so they can pass off stolen, smuggled stuff. It is a huge whole thing.
Oh, yeah. And the art world, I mean, there are fascinating.
I would be
stories.
Mad that my name, and you never even got it.
What's a documentary to watch that's kind of about stuff like this?
Oh, I don't have anything off of the top of my head.
But in the art world,
well, remember that smaller gallery in New England, I can't remember where, that just got robbed like 5 years ago? Like, all these great pieces of art, and they've never turned up yet.
Because they're in
private collections.
They have
to wait. And they're all sold to private collections. So this is like one of those pieces, and it was sold to Kim Kardashian via the interior designer. She doesn't even know what he's talking about. She just signed the paperwork, you know, and never even has seen it.
Well, and there's an interesting documentary, Julia, about the Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum in Boston.
That was the one.
All right, so that robbery happened about 30 years
ago. All right, or five. You know, depending on what you're, you know.
Yeah.
I've watched about three episodes of this four-part documentary on Netflix. It's called This Is a Robbery, and it goes into detail as much as it can about this robbery of from the Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum of these priceless pieces of art. There were Rembrandts and I think a Vermeer and other pieces of priceless art. But what's fascinating about it is then it starts to go down the trail of perhaps these pieces of art being collateral in the world of the mafia and other people. And I suggest if you're curious about the way that art is used as currency, if you just Google something called the Geneva Freeport. It is a warehouse in Geneva, Switzerland, where rich people can store their priceless pieces of art for tax-free.
No questions asked.
Yeah, in Switzerland. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark, Area 51,
right?
Where they just shove the ark somewhere in a rando box.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, people do this with these pieces of art, and then you can use these pieces of art to, you know, perhaps do some laundry, another thing. It's just, it goes on and on and on. And I found a quarter in the bottom of my purse.
Yeah, I know, but this story, that's a wild story.
Yeah, you know, when I said that we were going to get governmental with this dirt alert today, in other news concerning the government, the IRS got a big loss ruled in court earlier this week for the Michael Jackson estate. They thought that they were owed hundreds of millions of dollars in unpaid taxes by the estate of Michael Jackson, but a court ruled that the estate is not worth as much as the IRS thinks that it is, and that, you know, maybe they are not going to be receiving hundreds of millions of dollars from the estate.
They only, at like $4
million. Yeah, $4.2 million.
Yeah. So this is good for the kids.
Yes, this is
good for Michael Jackson's
kids. But
his
estate every year earns like $100 million.
Yeah.
I don't understand that.
Math.
No, but I mean, it doesn't make any sense at all. He's the highest earning dead celebrity.
Right. Well, and this tax case was turned on the value of Michael Jackson's public image at the time of his death.
Got it.
It was when he died, you know, and speaking, you know, after he passed away, Michael Jackson
was worth more dead than alive.
Yeah.
Which was always one of his fears.
Right. Now, the Michael Jackson estate found that their estimate of $2,105 was just too low. So it's, you know, a little more.
All right. Wow. Okay.
All right, Holly. I'm obsessed now with this art.
Oh.
You know, and there was a huge mafia bust last week.
Oh, my gosh.
Did you guys hear about that? Huge, global. In Italy, but also in
South
America.
It's like 000.
It is. Huge.
This Is a Robbery on Netflix. If you want to know more about stealing art, the mafia, and Rembrandt.
Okay. Thank you, Holly.
You're welcome. All right. Well, that was quite a...
Vintage Scandal.
It was quite the scandal.
Oh.
Wow, the drama, the tension.
The drama. Well, you know, today's Vintage Scandal, I thought, in honor of Sir Tom Jones... Becoming the oldest male artist to hit number one on the official UK album charts at the age of 80 years and 10 months.
That makes me so happy for him.
He eclipsed Bob Dylan, who led the chart at 79 in June of 2020 with Rough and Rowdy Ways. His new album, Surrounded by Time. I just couldn't be happier for him. And the late Dame Vera Lynn, the overall record holder, she was the lady from the 40s.
Yep.
She just died or whatever. She had the, you know, she sang Till We Meet Again. And she was like a sweetheart. She was a peer of Queen Elizabeth. She used to have it. But anyway, Sir Tom Jones made this achievement 3 days ago.
Okay, tell us what it is.
Okay, well, so here. I thought I would just, I wanted to go to stroll down Tom Jones' Love Lane, because of course he's a legend.
You and Colleen Lindstrom want to stroll down Tom Jones's Love Lane.
Because he famously, you know, was like Elvis. No, but had the underwear thrown at him. He and Elvis were friends. I've heard him talk about his great Elvis stories because they were both in Vegas at the same time. Right. But I was interested in, and I thought it's been enough time because his wife, whom he referred to as Lady Linda, she passed away 5 years ago. They had been married for 59 years. So enough time has passed that I can be...
talk about his...
That's right. Talk about ways. The fact that he, despite... I mean, he himself admitted he slept with up to 250 groupies a year.
A year.
If he was traveling. Okay, at the height of his fame.
A year.
And this is during the 59-year marriage?
Yes, okay. And how they met. Okay, so they
Can I show a picture?
Yes, show a picture for our YouTubers to follow along. They met, and they both are from the same Welsh mining village. It's 1957, and she basically...
Do you like the swimming trunks, Rocco?
Yeah. In his...
His or hers?
I love both of them. I love her swimsuit and I love his. Yours went away. But basically in his biography that he wrote in 2015 called Over the Top and Back, he told how he first fell for Linda when they were both 12 years old. And they're in this little tiny mining village and he had a crush on her.
Yeah.
She had a crush on him. And that same year, he was diagnosed with tuberculosis. And he spent 2 years in bed, convalescing, not going to school. And then when he went back to school, Linda was the one who would smile at him. Because remember, people were like, it's the plague. Oh. Am I going to get tuberculosis from you?
Right.
She would smile at him as she walked to school. And they're from Tree Forest, South Glamorgan.
Oh, it was easy for me
But
to
it
say.
Was not until just after her 15th birthday. Now, remember, was in bed until he was 14.
Right.
She agreed to date Thomas Woodward. That was his name.
Mm-hmm.
And they married shortly after her 16th birthday because...
they wanted to have sex.
No, they had already had sex and she was pregnant.
At 16?
This is my mom. Be careful. My mom and dad fell in love. They couldn't keep their hands off each other. They tried, but Julia...
I love you. Be careful.
Strong, horny lust is real.
Okay.
And... she gave birth just 1 month after becoming Mrs. Woodward. Okay. He's 17, she's 16. Mm-hmm. This is the only child they ever have. And his career was launched. I love all these photos you're showing.
This one's with David Niven, who's supposed to have the best
biography.
Yes,
I know.
That I'm dying to read.
So his career started in 1964. They'd already been married 7 years, and his manager sold the record label and everybody else the record that this kid's story, this robust baritone, this guy with this incredible voice, that he's a 22-year-old Welsh coal miner that he's discovered, basically.
Okay.
And not only was he not 22, he was 24.
Oh, wow.
He was married. He had a 7-year-old. His father worked at a local, like, something mine-affiliated, but Tom had never even been set foot in a mine.
And nor would he, because he had tuberculosis.
Right. So then his singing career takes off, and they just decide...
to keep her under covers.
Let's keep it in the background. No big deal. But his love for her was genuine. And
he was clear. He was depressed when she died.
He was very, very sad. But he had so many flings. He had numerous things. Like, for example, he had a whole thing with Mary Wilson of the Supremes, and she wrote about it in her book.
Okay.
She didn't get a lot of headlines for her messy headline in her book. She said, her book is called Dream Girl and Supreme Faith. She heard about this new singer in 1967 from her booking agent who did the Supremes. He was like, you should get to know him. He would love to meet you. And he was kind of this guy, Norman Wise, was playing matchmaker between Mary Wilson and Tom Jones, and he booked a Munich performance for the Supremes, knowing Tom Jones would be there. And she met Tom Jones backstage, ruffled white shirt, black tuxedo, high-waisted tight black pants.
I'm going to show the picture.
Mm-hmm. Sparks flew. He was absolutely gorgeous beyond belief. And they, anyway, but she felt just from meeting him, she'd fallen in love. That's how strong the animal's sexual magnetism.
Look at the size of that belt buckle.
Oh, yeah.
He was like a country western singer at this point in his life.
And so anyway, they just started having an affair. They would just fly to see each other in their gigs. His marriage never come up. She just didn't even think he was married. He was just, she'd meet him in New York, London. I mean, she had no idea. And only later that she found out, and she assumed that Tom thought she would know, because most of his fans by that time, they did know that he was married. Mm-hmm. Okay. And she says after finding out, she wanted to break up with him. And yeah, oh, look at that. That is
That's
epic.
Like the Dumb and Dumber pumpkin-colored tuxedo.
But she couldn't, even after she knew that he was married, because they were so intoxicated with each other, and they just would meet at great hotels while they were touring. She would fly just for a night. And after the press learned about their affair, she became
known. What year are we?
This is like 1968, 69, something like that. She became the person in the press. She's tearing his life apart. He was married. Linda was not happy about it when this became known, because then it was publicly humiliating her.
Of course.
And she would phone his house. His wife would wake up. On one occasion, she left a cabin in Tom Jones's limousine as his wife was arriving at the same cabin.
Oh.
And anyway, she just said, finally, I knew it had to end. But Tom Jones in his book said that Mary Wilson and his wife ended up becoming friends after the affair.
Mm-hmm.
How about that? And then also, he also had a thing. Now, listen to this juicy thing.
I hope it's Elizabeth Taylor.
No, on tour, he had two dressing rooms. One he called the workbench, which is where that groupie action happened. And he claimed he never kept count.
Literally.
He
really,
never kept
he was
count,
that much of a dog.
And his relationship with Miss World, this woman Marjorie, she was 19 in 1976. They were spotted kissing on a beach in Barbados. She lost her Miss World crown. Mm. And when Sir Tom realized Linda was going to learn about it, he told the beauty queen it was over. She took an overdose of sleeping pills.
Oh, no.
Ended up in a coma, but survived.
No.
It became National Enquirer news. And when she found out, you know, Tom Jones in his biography does write about that she chinned me out. She punched him in the face.
Okay.
And, but they did in the late 60s, unless it became public knowledge, as far as Linda going on the road with him or asking him about on the road groupie sex, she just doesn't ask. She just didn't like it when it became international news. And model Catherine Berkeley had a 4-day fling with Sir Tom. Probably he was at a 4-night stand, maybe Madison Square Garden. Who knows? You know what I'm just saying? It was just pure hotel hot sex. And she got pregnant.
Before cameras. Yeah.
And for 20 years, Tom denied that he was the father, even though she had DNA proof.
Wow.
She'd like hired a private detective and she knew he was her father. And a few years ago, he did, you know, in his book, he blamed her for seducing him with the idea of getting pregnant.
Oh, okay.
And at the time, he paid like $100,000 to her. Linda threatened to go back to Wales because they were living in Bel Air. He's long lived in California.
Well, he had the Mac Davis show in the 70s.
Oh, he won a Grammy. Golden Globe.
Yeah, he had a
big show.
A big show, an entertainment variety show.
Yeah, but he and his wife had moved to Bel Air in 1974 as a tax exile, and she became agoraphobic. She never went back to Wales, and when they lived in Beverly Hills, they would take Sunday drives and just have kind of a Beverly Hill, go out to little tiny restaurants and stuff. And There, you know,
is he dating anyone now that he is a widower for 5 years?
I don't know, but I wouldn't be surprised if he's got somebody. He was asked in an interview not that long ago, why didn't you ever write about any of these affairs, even the significant ones, in your memoir?
And his wife was alive.
Well, he said, I don't think it's important. It's not what has made me. It's not what gets you there. And she only gave one interview where she said, I feel alive when he comes through the door, whatever the time of day and night it is. And, he's also been criticized because he used to talk openly about his wife's depression and agoraphobia. And people felt that he was kind of making excuses why he had so many things, flings.
Right.
You know, but he just said, she's the most important person in my life. But he did admit he preferred to talk to her when she was live on the phone. And he said, when you're face to face with somebody, you realize that time has gone on. But when you're on the phone, you're both young again. So sometimes they would phone from each other's bedroom. And look at the younger pictures of them.
Sorry, you're going to do that to me.
Anyway,
Julie, I can't look at your feet. They're so much like my Casey.
But he's got an incredible career.
He's
always called like the guy who can sing absolutely. Like Elvis in that way, pop, R&B, gospel, show tune.
So he never really got into drugs and alcohol.
His thing were women.
Yeah. And Elvis wasn't women. I mean,
his were women.
But women, but not as much as this.
Well, not as much as taking pills to stay awake and go to bed.
His thing was more pills.
Yeah, Tom Jones definitely
was more his.
But they both loved jamming. That was like a big thing for both of them. Anyway.
Yeah.
And the first time Tom Jones performed in Vegas was the Flamingo. That was his.
The Flamingo was the spot, wasn't it?
Yeah.
All right.
This is Kelly Clarkson covering Smokey Robinson and the Miracles, an R&B classic. And I love her tone on this song, you know.
Oh, Kelly.
Does it make you want to roll down your nylons, Julia?
You know what I'm watching and I'm catching up on City of Lights? And I'm like on the third episode.
City on a Hill.
On Showtime with Kevin Bacon.
And Aldous Hodges.
Oh my gosh. Well, anywho, but one of the last night, his wife that he's married to is trying to get sexy and puts on nylons, you know, that you would use a G-string with and puts on a corset and, you know, bustier. And she's in the bed and he's like, what's up with you?
Oh, that was just brutal.
And she's sitting there trying to look sexy so she can, you know, get a little nookie from her husband. And I was just, and it was brutal.
It was, yeah. That is a good show.
I liked it, but I forgot about it. Now I'm just revisiting it. Like, they're long episodes. I feel like they're over an hour.
No,
you know, my attention span is about
just an hour. They're an hour.
I mean, I really, sometimes, and
Ben Affleck. I know they did.
It's so Boston.
It is so Boston.
I haven't been to Boston since you and I were there. Doing our trade show. That was the last time in the mid-90s.
That was so fun.
Mm-hmm.
Is that when we went to the last game at
Boston Square Gardens.
In the garden.
Boston, it's just called the garden. Deal.
All we did was run around and take pictures with all the
cops.
All the white-haired vendors and cops.
Yep.
And there's a look and so many. I've been at the garden for 40 years. And
we were getting their stories. But the thing that wasn't here yet at a sporting event was the finger.
Yeah, the foam finger.
The foam finger, the foam hand that you put your hand into. Lori and I would walk around. We got the finger. The finger.
That place smelled like sweat socks and
underwear. That's so funny because
was so stinky in there.
We did this and I went to, we went to the Yankee Stadium the last year that the Yankees were playing there. Same thing. These small stadiums where you bump your head, you turned a corner. It was kind of fun.
Yeah.
We've been in a lot of stadiums.
I'm going to a stadium tonight for the first time in a while. I'm going to go to Timberwolves game tonight.
Oh, you are? Oh, fun. Yeah, fun. Who are they playing?
They're playing the Memphis Grizzlies. I think Tyus Jones' team.
Oh. Sweet. Yeah.
Rocco, you're rocking your vaccinated self.
I kind of. Are you bringing the boy?
I am. You know,
he'll love it.
And I've heard good news about kids' vaccines coming out.
They're coming out soon. I know.
Yeah, that's good. Okay, here's just a little DVR alert, Julia. This is man candy galore. Jimmy Fallon has Chanamon.
I know.
And Josh Duhamel. Josh Duhamel has not been on a late
night. They're both on Jimmy Fallon?
Yes.
Oh,
tonight.
I love it.
So please set your DVR if you're interested in seeing either one of those. And then he's got a good Comic Con.
Okay, well, here's what I just want to tell you, because Chanum, which is Channing Tatum, or Tatum Chatum, or
what? Channing Tatum,
but we just call him Chanum. He was on with Kelly Clarkson yesterday, and he couldn't have been more adorable. And he just said, you know, I wish I was a better actor, because then I wouldn't have to always be in all these movies where I have to take my clothes off and I always have to work out. And he goes, all I do is work out. I work out. I can't complain because it's my job. But if I was a better actor, I could get better roles that didn't require me to be naked all the time.
Yeah,
he was very cute about it. I miss Channing.
I know. Same
here. We haven't seen him in a while.
No. Well, he's filming The Big D.
Yes.
With Sandra Bullock.
And then seeing Josh Duhamel, he'll be tan and he'll be back from, you know, being filming with what a delightful upgrade he got when Armie Hammer got booted from J-Lo's movie.
Yeah.
He's delightful.
I can't wait to see
him.
He's
a yummy.
I can't wait to see
yummy
him.
Yummy man.
I hope Jimmy asks him about fishing opener. You know, I hope we get a little.
It's not this weekend. It's usually Mother's Day weekend, but it's next weekend.
I'm just saying.
Minnesota, you know, you want
I don't care. I just want to give one. You know, I want Josh to be able to, you know, do his Minnesota, North Dakota thing. Usually always works in something.
He does.
Yeah.
Well, everybody have a fantastic night. It was the hump of the hump that we just made it through.
I'll let you know if I see Alex Rodriguez at the game tonight.
Okay, please, Rocco.
I bet you don't.
Job done. Off you go.